had to be thousands of rounds of 5.56mm ammunition. There were AR-18 rifles, 9mm Heckler & Koch VP-70 semi-automatic pistols complete with holsters and belts, plus more than an ample supply of Tech-10s. Farther on, they found bazookas, heavy tripod-mounted machine guns like the M60 and the M249, and several crates of grenades. Every piece of it, from the smallest caliber handgun to the big M79 grenade launcher, was in perfect condition. JB's eyes shone with unabashed longing.
Dark night. I could stay here a year just cataloging all this ordnance.
You've got about 5 minutes.
Christy sat down on a box. A dew of perspiration had gathered at her temples. Her eyes were glassy and her hands trembled.
That's all, folks. It's all I can do to stay conscious.
When is the next guard changeover, Fleur?
Not for a couple of hours, at 10. But we can't assume someone won't pass by and notice the guards are gone.
Found him!
While they had followed JB through the death-dealing Wonderland, Jack had dropped back and fulfilled the original purpose of breaching the armory. He returned and handed everyone their personal weapons and belongings.
1 minute. We can't pass up this chance to stock up on ammo and a few other odds and ends.
JB snatched a burlap bag from a wall hook and rushed deep into the storehouse.
Everybody make sure they've got a full load before we move out.
What about me?
What about you? Can you handle a blaster with the shape your hands are in?
I'd like to help, as long as I'm sharing the risks.
You've certainly undergone an extreme change in attitude. Perhaps a bit too extreme.
JB emerged from the aisles, carrying a bulging sack. He handed Fleur a paper-wrapped cylinder about 6 inches long.
Here, hold on to this. When I give the word, break it in half along the dotted line.
Why?
You'll see. Okay, let's go.
The five of them moved quickly through the streets. They reached the shadowed rear of the saloon without being hailed by any passers-by or seeing any sec men. Their Land Rover was still there, still sitting on flattened tires. JB studied the Wag compound across the dusty street. The chain-link gate was secured by a padlock, and beyond it, two guards were loitering around the gasoline pumps. One carried a walkie-talkie slung over his shoulder by a strap.
Now what? If we just stroll over, they'll recognize me. And the rest of you aren't exactly forgettable.
Except for me. I'm what you call inoculated.
Innocuous.
JB handed his sack and hat to Jack. He folded his spectacles into a coat pocket before taking it off and draping it over his right arm, the Uzi in his fist. Then he mussed his hair.
Everybody get ready to move. You'll know when. Triple red.
He contorted his face into a vacant-eyed, imbecilic mask and started shuffling drunkenly across the street. When he reached the gate of the compound, he hung on to the interlocking wire links with his left hand and stared at the ground. One of the sec men sauntered toward him, leaving his companion with a walkie-talkie.
What are you doing there, jolt brain?
Lost my ma's locket.
What?
Lost my ma's locket.
Where?
JB jerked his shoulder in the direction of the saloon.
Back there.
He saw the sec man's partner respond to a call on the comm unit, unslinging it and holding it up to the side of his head.
Then why the fuck are you looking for it over here?
Because...
The barrel of the Uzi poked through a link in the gate and pressed against the man's belly.
The light is better over here. You got the key to the lock?
Oh, shit.
Very, very carefully. I want you to unlock the gate. Act like you're having a nice conversation with the jolt brain.
Hey, Pooh Bear! Got an alert! Them outlanders escaped! Jilt Tex and TJ!
JB saw the fear in the man's eyes change to panic, and he opened his mouth to bellow a reply. JB had no choice. JB unlocked the gate and pushed it open. The companions joined him. Christy was reeling, clinging to Doc, who had one arm around her waist. JB ran a quick check on the nearest dune buggy, noting that the 10-gallon tank was full. Jack pointed to the gasoline pumps.
Couple 5-gallon cans over there.
Good, go fill them.
The keys to the vehicle were hanging by a string from the rearview mirror. Relieved that he didn't have to hotwire it, JB nevertheless checked out the ignition, looking for an explosive charge.
They'll just come after us, you know? Run us to ground like deer.
Maybe so, maybe not so. Okay, electrical system is clean.
Everybody piled into the dune buggy. Christy sat limply against Doc, her eyes fluttering with the effort to keep conscious. JB steered around to the fuel pumps. Jack had just finished filling the two cans, and he heaved them onto the floorboards in front of the passenger seat. He exchanged a quick nod with JB, then produced one of his knives. He slashed through the pumping hose at a point just below the nozzle.
Come on, Jack!
The dune buggy rolled toward the open gate. Down the street raced a group of sec men, about five of them.
Fleur, you got that flare?
Yeah.
Break it and throw it toward the fuel pumps.
She looked a little shocked. Then a smile spread over her face. A blinding, reddish-white light splashed her with an eerie luminescence. JB saw that the sec men were unslinging their weapons.
Throw it!
Turning in her seat, Fleur hurled the burning flare in an overhead half-loop toward the fuel pumps. JB floored the WAG's accelerator. A mushrooming orange ball of fire shot angrily upward. The pumps were uprooted from the concrete apron, and they rocketed into the night sky. The fuel storage tank beneath the compound exploded, ripping a ragged crater in the ground. The other vehicles in the compound were flung in all directions and overturned. The gasoline in their spilled tanks erupted in secondary explosions. The shockwaves thundered across Hellscale, knocking people flat, pushing over merchant stalls, shattering every window. Burning debris and WAG parts rained onto the dusty streets atop the nearest buildings. Hungry flames jumped from shack to hovel to geodesic dome to the rear wall of the saloon.
How'd she handle?
Great! I still miss the hot spur, though.
Do not bother yourself over the loss, John Barrymore. If this were tit for tat, we have just paid Hellscale back for its loss, and then some.
Doug directed Ryan away from the perimeter of the city, stepping over the beltway. A beetle appeared, hovering behind and above Doug, following them like a guard dog. Ryan noticed that Doug was wearing another ID badge, identical to the one he had lifted. When they reached a vanadium alloy wall, Doug aimed a small remote control device at it. It was a simple sonic lock switch, of a type Ryan had seen before. A large section of the wall moved forward, tilting back from its bottom edge. It slid out on pneumatic hinges, turning into an upslanted ramp. Ryan was herded up the ramp and into a wide metal-walled tunnel. It was fairly long and obviously ran into the bowels of the mountain. They walked for what seemed like a long time. Ryan saw that one section of wall to his left consisted of a glassy, smoke-tinted panel. He glanced into it, then halted. Frightful life lapped behind the transparent panel. Within a darkened chamber recessed deep in the wall flitted a swarm of scream wings. The chamber was a specially designed habitat with branches to roost upon and prey to pursue and kill. However, these scream wings were larger than the creatures he had seen a few days earlier. Their scaled black bodies were nearly a foot long, and their wingspreads were more than 3 feet.
What's up with the scream wings? The commander's pets?
In a way, more like a project. We're working on a way to increase their size and reduce their birth mortality rate. The mothers tend to eat their young. That's one reason they're rare.
Damn good thing. They're some of the most vicious predators in Deathlands.
We wouldn't be interested in them otherwise. Many of the mutations that veered toward polyploidism...
Poly what?
Polyploidism. Gigantism. They were evolutionary dead ends, examples of a spontaneous doubling of the chromosomes. Most of the giant mutants aren't healthy, with extremely limited lifespans. The Screamwings, on the other hand, are perfectly adapted to their environment. They're a purer breed of killer.
That's my point. Why make them larger and more numerous?
Microcircuitry, Cawdor, introduced into their brains, connected to the visual neural system. We'll be able to control specific behavior, and they'll make an excellent offensive-defensive measure. They'll be completely expendable, too, since we'll always be able to breed more. Obviously, all of this is way beyond you. If the commander wants to give you a tour of our bioengineering facility, that's up to him. Let's go.
They continued another 100 yards down the tunnel. There they turned into another stretch of tunnel and reached a door. The door frame bore a square-armed red cross. The beetle hovered outside the open doorway. The room was occupied by a white-coated man. He had a kindly, smiling face, and he appeared to have been expecting them. He looked to be about Doc's age.
Strip, please.
Ryan hesitated, and Doug pushed the shotgun against his spine. Ryan took off his clothes and stood naked. His bones felt bruised, his flesh numb, his head light. The man examined him closely, without voicing any curiosity about his wounds or his old scars. Removing Ryan's eye patch, he peered closely at the puckered socket, but he didn't touch it. With remarkably gentle fingers, he probed